The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we had been looking at the idea of science, what it is capable of doing, what it is not capable of doing. And I tried to indicate plainly that there simply is no scientific evidence about creation. We have revelational information about that in the scripture. And as I was mentioning, this is one of the reasons that it is critical that the earth, scripture be authoritative and trustworthy, inerrant in the autographs. If the scripture is in error when it speaks about matters of creation in Genesis 1, then it can just as easily be in error when it speaks about matters of salvation in John 3. Now, what then about the question of the origin of life? If I were to tell you a story about a beautiful princess kissing an ugly green frog on the nose and turning him into a handsome prince, I presume you'd be aware of the fact that I was telling you a fairy tale. And yet there are people who will pick up books like Oprin's book on the origin of life, or Keosian's book by the same title, or books by men like Fox or Haldane or Urey or Miller or any one of a half a dozen others, and read there a discussion of how matter has changed into folks. Now, later on, we'll spend some time discussing this in detail. But at this point, I would simply have you do a little thinking about what is the basic difference between the princess and the frog and these men's view of how humans have come into existence. If you will think about that, I think you will agree that the basic difference is simply a matter of time. The princess and the green frog is something that happens rapidly, and the idea of matter changing into living things is something which requires millions and billions of years. And that is basically the only difference. Is one any more reasonable than the other? And the answer to that, of course, is no, it really isn't. What I'd like for us to do right now is to give some consideration to the possibilities for the origin of the earth. How many possibilities are there for the earth to come into being? As far as I am aware, there are only four of these. One of these is simply the idea that the earth is eternal. That is, that it has been around forever, or to put it a little more basically, that matter is eternal. On the first Cosmos program, the statement was made, a rather cryptic statement about matter, that the cosmos is all that is, or ever was, or ever will be. Now that is a fairly succinct summary of an evolutionary view of matter. And again, we will spend some time talking about the problems of trying to go from matter to living things. Is there any evidence that would suggest that matter has the capability of changing itself into organisms which are alive? And regardless of your philosophy, there simply is not any evidence that would suggest that this is true. It is an important question. If you have an individual who rejects God as creator, who takes the view that God is the absolute, that idea is rejected, then what becomes absolute for such an individual? And the answer to that question is simply matter. If God is rejected as being the absolute, then matter has to become the absolute, not man, because in an evolutionist view, man would simply be a product of that process of matter changing itself into living things. So once this is understood, then it's helpful, I think, in understanding a great many of the ideas that we find prevailing in our society, in our world today. If matter is the absolute, then some of the peculiar ideas that we see propagandized and accepted by so many people begin to make some sense. And some of these also we will talk about as we get down the trail to do that. Now, we would reject the idea that the earth is eternal for a very simple reason. There is in the crust of the earth, there are present in the earth elements, unstable elements that are slowly decomposing into stable end products. Uranium, for example, slowly decomposing into lead. If the earth were eternal, would there be any uranium left in the earth? And the answer, of course, would be no. If the earth were eternal, then all the uranium that had bumbled into existence at some point would now have been changed into lead. The fact that there is none of this is a suggestion of the fact that the earth has not been around forever. And if it's not been around forever, then it had a beginning. And the next step in logic would suggest that it also has to have a beginner. So we would do away with this first possibility that the earth, the possibility for the origin of the earth, that it's eternal. A second is the possibility that it's imaginary. Now, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, this would not have been a very important area of discussion. It would not have been worth taking up much time with. But the fact is, we have gotten to a place today and to the point where there probably are more people who hold this view than there are those who hold the view of creation. One of the predictable consequences of evolution is that man comes to regard himself as the epitome of evolution, and either as a god or at least with the capability of evolving into a god some way. And if that is the case, then the processes that occur in man's head, the perambulations there, become critical. The imagination of man's mind becomes absolutely critical. This idea, among the tenets that underlie this approach, the idea of physical monism, the idea that all is one, one is all is God. This is a basic idea of the New Age philosophies. It is a basic idea of certain forms of evolution. It is involved in the occult. It is part of any of the Eastern Oriental meditation religions. In my opinion, it is probably the most important single unbiblical view that we find ourselves opposing. And for that reason, we will take several programs later and talk more about the idea of physical monism. At this stage of the game, let me simply make this observation to you. If you have enough sense to understand that you are not me, that I am not you, that you are not a chair or an automobile or a bumblebee or a bird or the sun, then you have enough sense to understand that there is something critically wrong with the idea of physical monism. For those people who hold to that view, then whatever comes out of their mind is of immense importance, for some, ultimate importance. Nothing else matters except the machinations of their own mind. And for that reason, we see some of the peculiar ideas circulating today that are around. There are a variety of arguments against it. I would simply observe at this stage of the game that it is an unbiblical view, and that it is an easily demonstrably faulty view as well. There are philosophical arguments against the idea that the imagination of man's mind is ultimate, that what I think becomes reality. Unfortunately, this has infected some people who are Bible believers, that simply by their own meditation or focusing their mind, they can bring into existence any kind of desirable physical condition that they want, a new automobile or a home or whatever, and that God simply becomes a busboy of sorts to help them arrive at whatever it is they have decided they need. And I hope it is not necessary to spend a lot of time discussing how unbiblical this happens to be. The refutation of this, I think, would lie in this line of argument, that if we see an imaginary man walking across an imaginary field with an imaginary axe on his shoulder, and he walks up to an imaginary tree and takes his imaginary axe and starts chopping on the imaginary tree, and the imaginary tree falls down, then somewhere in all of this there's something that's not imaginary. Somewhere in all of this there is something which is very real. And in spite of the popularity of the idea, we would also reject this as well. So of the four possibilities, two of them we have simply rejected: the idea that matter, that the earth is eternal, and the idea that the earth is simply imaginary. Now that leaves us then with the possibility of two other bases of appearance of the earth. One of these is simply the idea that God created it, as the scripture tells us he did. The other is the possibility that somehow it spontaneously generated out of nothing, out of matter. There are a variety of views about this. So we've rejected two possibilities, we're stuck with two. For any person who is thoughtful, they must accept one or the other of those two views. They either must accept the idea that God created the earth, or they have to accept the idea that somehow the earth created itself. I hope every person who has done any thinking about this understands that they make a choice about those two views, that they accept one or the other of those two views based on presuppositions which they have accepted, which really have nothing to do with the view itself. Now, if this idea is not understood, then you have a false basis for many people attempting to defend the choice that they have made. And it is just that, a choice. What we're going to discuss is simply the responsibility of a believer to be able to demonstrate clearly and unambiguously to unbelievers that there is reasonable evidence to support the idea that God created the earth. This is what Peter is talking about in 1 Peter 3:15. Be ready always to give an answer to those who ask a reason of the hope that lieth in you with meekness and fear. So we have a biblical responsibility to be able to provide that answer to this question.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.